It's always been for the pack, Luna. You know that. David's voice was smooth, the velvet thrum of an alpha. But it didn't hide the cold finality in his eyes. Luna stood frozen, the heavy silk of her ceremony dress suddenly feeling like a shroud. She looked from him to the woman standing half a step behind him. Elena, the daughter of the Northern Ridge Alpha. "For the pack," Luna repeated, the words tasting like ash. "Or for the Alliance," her father promised. "Don't do this here," David murmured, glancing toward the crowded courtyard. "Accept the severance gracefully." "I will accept nothing from you," Luna said, her voice dropping to a dangerous whisper. "You've chosen your queen, David. Now watch me build my own kingdom." The air in the grand hall was thick with the scent of pine, nervous sweat, and the cloying perfume of the visiting Northern Ridge delegation. Luna stood near the grand archway, a solitary figure amidst the swirling colors of the celebration. The mating ceremony was supposed to be hers. For 3 years, she had stood by David's side as his chosen mate, navigating the treacherous politics of the Silver Crescent Pack, securing trade routes, and earning the loyalty of the elders. She had earned her place. But tonight, the moon goddess's blessing felt like a cruel joke. Across the room, David was holding court. He looked every inch the Alpha King. Tall, broad-shouldered, with dark hair that caught the ambient light and eyes the color of a stormy sea. Those eyes, which had once looked at her with warmth and promise, now actively avoided her direction. Beside him stood Elena. She was undeniably beautiful, delicate and fair-haired, a stark contrast to Luna's practical, athletic build and sharp, intelligent features. Elena possessed a fragile grace that seemed to demand protection, a quality Luna had never afforded herself. Luna watched as David leaned down to whisper something in Elena's ear, making her laugh. A light, silvery sound that grated on Luna's nerves. A low growl rumbled in Luna's chest, a primal reaction she forced down with a sheer act of will. She would not cause a scene. She would not give them the satisfaction of seeing her break. "He's a fool, you know." Luna didn't turn. She recognized the dry, gravelly voice. It was Silas, the pack's historian and one of the few elders who had genuinely supported her. "A fool with a very powerful new father-in-law," Luna replied softly, her gaze still fixed on the couple. "Power is an illusion when it's built on a foundation of betrayal," Silas noted, leaning heavily on his walking stick. "You built the trade agreements that kept this pack from starving during the last winter. Elena brings soldiers, yes, but soldiers need feeding." "David believes the Northern Ridge Alliance will secure our borders permanently," Luna said, stating the facts as she understood them, trying to keep the bitterness out of her tone. "It's a tactical decision, and a cowardly one," Silas muttered. "He fears your strength as much as he needs it. Elena will be compliant. You demand a true partnership." Luna closed her eyes for a brief moment. The truth stung, but Silas was right. David had always been intimidated by her ambition, her quick mind, and her refusal to simply fall in line. He wanted a mate, yes, but he also wanted a subject. The music suddenly shifted, the lively folk tune replaced by a slow, solemn rhythm. The mating dance was about to begin. The crowd parted, forming a large circle in the center of the hall. David led Elena to the center. They moved together, a picture of unity and power. Luna felt a cold knot tighten in her stomach. This was the final public declaration. She couldn't watch. Luna turned and slipped out through the archway, moving silently down the stone corridor that led to the archives. It was quiet here, the air smelling of old paper and dust. She needed a moment to gather her thoughts, to plan her next move. The severance was complete. By pack law, she was now essentially an outcast, a woman without standing or purpose. She reached her small office, a room tucked away near the back of the archives. It was cluttered with maps, ledgers, and correspondence, the physical evidence of the work she had done for the pack. She picked up a thick, leather-bound book, her personal journal, and flipped through the pages. Ideas, strategies, plans for expanding the pack's influence beyond the immediate borders. David had dismissed most of them as too risky. A sudden sound at the door made her jump. It was David. He stepped into the room, closing the door behind him. The air instantly crackled with tension. "You left the ceremony," he said, his voice carefully neutral. "I didn't think my presence was required for your celebration," Luna replied, keeping her own voice steady. "Luna, I..." He hesitated, running a hand through his hair. "I didn't want it to end like this." "Then you shouldn't have ended it," she countered quickly. "It's complicated," he sighed, leaning against the doorframe. "The Northern Ridge." "I know about the Alliance, David," Luna interrupted. "I read the reports before you did. But you could have found another way. We could have negotiated a treaty without..." She trailed off, gesturing vaguely toward the hall. "Elena's father demanded a union," David said flatly. "It was the only way to guarantee his support." "So you sold me out?" "I made a choice for the good of the pack," he insisted, his tone hardening. "You, of all people, should understand sacrifice." Luna laughed, a sharp, humorless sound. "I understand sacrifice perfectly, David. I sacrificed 3 years of my life building this pack's prosperity, and my reward is to be tossed aside." "You will be provided for," he said, his voice dropping slightly. "A cottage on the edge of the territory, an allowance..." "A cage," Luna spat. "You want to hide me away so I don't remind you of your cowardice." David's eyes flashed with anger. "Don't push me, Luna. I am still your alpha." "Not anymore," she said quietly. The words felt incredibly heavy, yet liberating. "I formally reject the severance terms." David stared at her, stunned. "You can't. You have no standing." "I will leave the Silver Crescent," Luna declared, her voice firm. "I will take my things and I will go." "And go where?" David scoffed. "A lone wolf doesn't survive long." Luna met his gaze, her expression unreadable. "I am not a lone wolf, David. I am a survivor, and I am done surviving in your shadow." She grabbed her journal, shoved it into her satchel, and walked past him, refusing to look back. The scent of pine and betrayal lingered in the air long after she was gone. The boundary line of the Silver Crescent territory was marked by an ancient, lightning-scarred oak tree. Luna stood before it, her leather satchel heavy against her hip. The rain had begun to fall, a steady, freezing drizzle that plastered her dark hair to her cheeks and seeped into the collar of her coat. She did not look back. There was no grand farewell, no gathering of pack members to mourn her departure. She had slipped out through the service roads, utilizing the very supply routes she had mapped out 3 years prior. Stepping past the oak tree required a physical exertion she had not anticipated. As her boot crossed the invisible threshold, a sickening tear echoed not in the air, but within her chest. The pack bond, the ethereal golden thread that connected her to David, to Silas, to the very soil of the territory, snapped. Luna gasped, falling to her knees in the wet gravel. It felt as though a rib had been cleanly extracted from her torso without anesthetic. She wrapped her arms around her stomach, her breath coming in short, ragged plumes of white vapor. the ambient hum of the pack mind, a comforting background noise she had lived with for years, was suddenly replaced by a deafening, terrifying silence. She was rogue. The designation tasted like copper in her mouth. She remained in the mud for 10 long minutes, letting the freezing rain numb the phantom pain in her chest. Logic, cold and sharp, eventually cut through the agony. Remaining here meant vulnerability. Standing up, her joints protesting, she brushed the gravel from her knees and continued walking toward the state highway. She did not shift into her wolf form. A lone wolf running near human infrastructure drew attention, and she needed anonymity above all else. Instead, she walked 3 miles to a desolate bus shelter, huddling on a damp wooden bench until the headlights of the midnight transit pierced the gloom. The bus was nearly empty. Luna paid her fare with crumpled human currency she had kept stashed in her office for emergencies, taking a seat near the back. As the vehicle rumbled forward, carrying her away from the forests and into the sprawling concrete perimeter of the human city of Oakhaven, she pulled her journal from her satchel. The pages were filled with meticulously drawn charts, contact names, and logistical network plans that David had deemed unnecessary for a traditional werewolf pack. David believed power resided in fangs, territory, and ancient bloodlines. Luna knew the modern world operated differently. True power was supply chains, information, and capital. By dawn, the bus deposited her in the heart of Oakhaven's financial district. The city was a towering labyrinth of glass, steel, and unceasing motion. It smelled of exhaust, roasting coffee, and damp pavement, a chaotic masking scent that made it impossible for any tracker to find her. She navigated the early morning commuter rush with singular purpose. Arriving at the brass doors of the Oakhaven Central Depository. 3 years ago, anticipating that pack politics were inherently unstable, Luna had quietly opened a private safety deposit box under an assumed name. Inside the private viewing room, she unlocked the long metal box. It contained a modest sum of untraceable cash, a forged but highly convincing set of identification documents bearing the name Luna Vance, and a sleek, burner smartphone. It was not a fortune, but it was a foundation. Her first call was not for shelter, but for a meeting. "Julian," she said when the line clicked open. Her voice was remarkably steady, betraying none of the physical trauma she had endured hours earlier. A refined, slightly amused voice answered, "I was beginning to wonder if the brilliant strategist of the Silver Crescent would ever utilize my private number." "To what do I owe the pleasure, Luna?" Julian Thorne was a human venture capitalist who operated in the gray space between human enterprise and werewolf territories. He facilitated discreet trades for packs that needed modern technology but disdained human interaction. Luna had negotiated with him twice in the past, entirely by proxy. "I am no longer with the Silver Crescent," Luna stated clearly, setting the parameters of the conversation immediately. "I am in Oakhaven. I require 30 minutes of your time, and in exchange, I will offer you the ground floor of a logistics network that will render the Northern Ridge trade routes obsolete." A long silence stretched over the line. Julian was a man who calculated risk for a living. He knew the implications of a pack severing its primary strategist. "The Vanguard Club. Noon," Julian finally replied, his tone shifting from amused to sharply professional. "Dress for the dining room. They have strict rules about denim." "I will be there," Luna said. She hung up, catching her reflection in the polished steel of the deposit box. She looked exhausted, her clothes damp and wrinkled, her eyes shadowed with betrayal. But behind the exhaustion, a cold, unyielding fire burned. David had chosen a decorative queen to sit beside him in the forest. Luna was going to build an empire that would eventually pave over his borders, She gathered her cash, her new identity, and stepped back out into the concrete jungle to buy a suit. 6 months passed with the brutal, unrelenting speed of a falling guillotine. In the heart of Oak Haven's commercial sector, on the 42nd floor of a sleek high-rise, Luna stood by floor-to-ceiling windows, watching the city lights bleed into the twilight. She wore a tailored charcoal blazer, her posture impeccable, her expression unreadable. The door to her office chimed softly. "Enter," Luna said, not turning away from the glass. Julian Thorne stepped into the spacious room, holding a sleek digital tablet. He dropped into one of the leather armchairs opposite her mahogany desk, crossing his legs with an air of practiced ease. "The quarterly projections are in for Ethelgard Logistics," Julian announced, a satisfied smirk playing on his lips. "We have successfully rerouted 60% of the raw silver transport away from the traditional pack handlers. By utilizing independent contractors and human shell companies, we are moving the goods twice as fast, for 20% less overhead." Luna finally turned, resting her hip against the edge of her desk. "And the Northern Ridge Territory?" Julian consulted his tablet. "Feeling the squeeze, Alpha Marcus, Elena's father, is attempting to raise his tariffs to compensate for the lost transit fees. It is making him deeply unpopular with the smaller allied packs." "Predictable," Luna murmured, crossing her arms. It had been a grueling 6 months. Luna had barely slept, channeling every ounce of her grief, anger, and packless isolation into the singular goal of establishing Ethelgard. With Julian's initial capital and her encyclopedic knowledge of werewolf territorial economies, she had exploited every inefficiency in the traditional system. Wolves were creatures of habit, relying on handshake deals and ancient honor systems. Luna introduced binding contracts, satellite tracking, and ruthless corporate efficiency. She had not built a pack. She had built a machine. "There is something else?" Julian noted, his tone turning cautious. He swiped on his tablet, sending a document to the large monitor on Luna's wall. "We intercepted a communication string from the Silver Crescent. Financial ledgers, mostly." Luna's breath hitched slightly, a tiny betrayal of her composure. She had forbidden any direct surveillance of David's pack, not out of lingering affection, but out of a desire for absolute mental separation. "I requested we leave them out of our immediate operations, Julian." "I know. But this crossed my desk through a secondary vendor. You need to see it," he insisted gently. Luna stepped toward the monitor. The ledgers were a disaster. The trade agreements she had carefully balanced 3 years ago were unraveling. Elena, as the new Luna, was supposed to manage the pack's internal economy. Instead, the documents showed massive expenditures on territorial expansions that yielded no resources, and lavish ceremonial upgrades. Worse, the winter grain reserves, usually purchased in late summer, had not been secured. "They are running out of capital," Luna observed, her voice detached, clinical. "David relied on the Northern Ridge to supplement their income, but Elena's father is keeping his wealth tightly controlled." "It gets worse," Julian said, standing and pointing to a highlighted section. "Look at the debt structure. Alpha Marcus isn't just withholding funds. He is lending money to the Silver Crescent at extortionate interest rates, using their border territories as collateral." Luna's eyes narrowed as she did the math in her head. The logic was inescapable, the strategy viciously clear. "It's a hostile takeover," she whispered. "Marcus didn't marry his daughter off to form an alliance. He married her off to bankrupt David and legally absorb the Silver Crescent territory when they inevitably default on these loans." A heavy silence filled the office. David, for all his physical strength and charisma, was a tactical novice compared to the ancient, calculating alpha of the Northern Ridge. He had traded a partner who guarded his back for a pawn who was opening his gates. "Do we intervene?" Julian asked softly, watching her face for any sign of emotional fracture. Luna stared at the ledger, tracing the numbers that represented the ruin of the man who had discarded her. She remembered the cold finality in David's eyes in the courtyard, the way he had offered her a cage disguised as a cottage. She remembered the snapping of the bond. "No," Luna said, turning off the monitor with a sharp click of a remote. "Let them starve. When they are entirely broken, when Marcus prepares to foreclose on their land, Ethelgard will step in and purchase the Silver Crescent's debt." Julian raised an eyebrow, impressed by the sheer, unadulterated ice in her strategy. "You want to own your former alpha?" "I want to own the land," Luna corrected smoothly, walking back to her desk and opening a new file. "David is merely a tenant who is behind on his rent. However, we may have to adjust our timeline. My receptionist informed me we have an unscheduled visitor in the lobby downstairs." Julian frowned. "Who?"
"Silas,"
Luna replied. A flicker of genuine warmth finally breaking through her professional facade. "The Silver Crescent historian. It seems the elders have realized their king is leading them off a cliff, and they have sent the only man who knows how to find me." The heavy glass doors of Luna's office slid open, and the sleek, temperature-controlled environment of Ethelgard Logistics was suddenly invaded by the faint, unmistakable scent of damp earth, old pine, and winter frost. Silas stood in the doorway. He looked smaller than Luna remembered, his woolen coat frayed at the cuffs, his silver hair thinning. He leaned heavily on his carved wooden cane, his pale eyes scanning the minimalist steel and leather of the room. When his gaze finally landed on Luna, a slow, deeply tired smile touched his weathered face. "You have built a very high tower, Luna," the old historian rasped, his voice echoing slightly in the vast space. "It is a long climb for an old wolf." Luna felt a sudden, sharp ache in her throat, a ghost of the pack bond she had forced herself to forget. She stepped around the mahogany desk, her heels clicking softly against the polished concrete floor, and pulled out one of the leather armchairs. "Sit, Silas."
"Please," she said, her voice softer than it had been in 6 months.
She glanced at Julian, who gave a brief, understanding nod, and slipped silently out of the office, closing the glass doors behind him to give them privacy. Luna moved to a side console and poured two cups of Lapsang Souchong tea, the smoky aroma reminiscent of the campfires they used to sit around during the autumn festivals. She placed a cup in front of him. Silas took it with trembling hands, inhaling the steam. "You know why I am here. I know the pack is bankrupt," Luna replied, returning to her desk but remaining standing, maintaining a professional distance. "I know Marcus is squeezing David for every acre of borderland. I know the winter stores were never secured." Silas closed his eyes, a profound sadness settling over his features. "It is worse than the ledgers suggest, child. The elders are having their rations so the pups can eat. The hunting grounds are overfarmed. David is trapped. He paces the hall like a caged animal, but his pride will not allow him to admit he was played. Elena cares only for the aesthetic of being a queen. She complains of the cold while the Omegas freeze." Luna's jaw tightened. She forced herself to look at the sprawling city below, a sea of lights that cared nothing for werewolf politics. "It is a tragedy, Silas. But it is the tragedy David chose. I cannot save a man who actively built his own gallows." "I did not come to ask you to save David," Silas said sharply,
the sudden strength in his voice making Luna turn back. The old wolf was fixing her with a piercing stare. "I came to ask you to save your people. They are not my people anymore," Luna stated, the words tasting like ash. The bond was severed. The mating bond was severed. Silas corrected, tapping his cane against the floor for emphasis. But Packlaw is older than David's foolish pride. He was so eager to finalize the union with Elena that he neglected the bureaucratic rites. He never formally petitioned the council to excommunicate your bloodline. You are rogue by circumstance, Luna, not by law. Legally, you are still a citizen of the Silver Crescent. Luna froze. Her analytical mind instantly grasped the implications of what the historian was saying. If she was not legally excommunicated, she was not an outsider interfering in pack business. She was a member. Silas reached into his frayed coat and pulled out a rolled, crumbling parchment wrapped in leather. He set it gently on her desk. The original charter of the Silver Crescent, drafted in the 17th century. The Alpha is the sovereign of the land, yes. But the land exists to sustain the pack. Luna stepped forward, her eyes tracing the ancient, faded ink. If an Alpha fails to sustain the pack, Silas continued, his voice dropping to a conspiratorial whisper, and a pack member holds the primary debt of the territory, that member has the right to invoke the right of stewardship, a tribunal of assets. Luna's breath hitched. It was a loophole, a massive historical loophole, buried under centuries of tradition. It wasn't physical combat. She didn't have to defeat David in a duel of fangs and claws. It was a legal coup. "You want me to buy the debt from Marcus?" Luna realized, her mind racing, calculating the capital required. "I want you to take the territory," Silas said, leaning forward. "Marcus thinks he is playing a game of checkers with a boy. I want you to show him you are playing chess. Own the debt. Invoke the right. Depose the king legally, without shedding a drop of pack blood." Luna stared at the parchment. The cold, unyielding fire that had driven her for 6 months flared into a blinding inferno. She looked up at Silas, her expression hardening into something terrifyingly resolute. "Tell the elders to hold on for one more month," Luna commanded. "Tell them help is coming. But Silas, when I return, I will not be returning as an advisor." Silas smiled, a predatory gleam returning to his old eyes. "I would expect nothing less, Alpha." The grand hall of the Silver Crescent Packhouse was freezing. Outside, a bitter January wind howled through the ancient pines, rattling the stained glass windows that David had ordered installed for his wedding just 6 months prior. Now, the vibrant colors of the glass seemed mocking in the dim, gray light of the winter afternoon. David sat at the massive oak dining table, swathed in a heavy wool sweater, staring at a stack of unpaid invoices. His breath plumed in the air. To conserve the rapidly dwindling firewood, they were only heating the nursery and the elders' quarters. The cold seeped into his bones, a constant, gnawing physical manifestation of his failure. He rubbed his eyes, which were bloodshot and dark-circled. The numbers on the paper blurred. They owed Marcus $200,000 by the end of the week. It was a balloon payment on a loan David had taken out to cover the exorbitant dowry and the subsequent security upgrades Elena had insisted upon. Footsteps echoed on the stone floor. Elena walked in, wrapped in a floor-length white mink coat, her arms crossed tight against her chest. "David, this is intolerable," she complained, her voice echoing shrilly in the empty hall. "The water in my wash basin had a layer of ice on it this morning. My father's kennels are kept warmer than this." David clenched his jaw, fighting the urge to snap at her. "We are conserving resources, Elena. The pack comes first." "I am the Luna," she retorted, her pretty face twisting into a scowl. I shouldn't be freezing in my own home. If you would just call my father, I'm sure he would send a generator and some oil. I am not begging your father for oil, David growled, standing up, his chair scraping loudly against the stone. We already owe him enough. Elena rolled her eyes, oblivious to the sheer terror masking his anger. He's family, David. It's not a real debt. It's just accounting. David stared at his mate. In the beginning, he had been blinded by her pedigree, her beauty, and the promise of the Northern Ridge Army standing at his borders. But over the last 6 months, he had realized a horrifying truth. Elena was decorative. When crises arose, she deferred to her father. When the ledgers didn't balance, she suggested throwing a gala to raise morale. She didn't understand the intricate, brutal mechanics of running a territory. Luna used to balance these ledgers in an hour, while simultaneously negotiating lumber contracts and organizing the hunting patrols. Luna had been a partner. Elena was a dependent. Leave me, Elena. I need to work, David said, his voice flat, devoid of affection. She scoffed, turning on her heel. Fine. I'll be in the car with the heater on. As she left, the heavy wooden doors of the hall pushed open again. It was Elias, David's beta, looking grim. Beside him stood a human man in a sharply tailored suit, clutching a leather briefcase. The man looked entirely out of place in the rustic packhouse, yet completely unafraid. Alpha, Elias said, his voice tight. This is Mr. Vance. He represents a financial firm from Oakhaven. David frowned, unease prickling at the back of his neck. I don't do business with human firms. You do now, Alpha David, the lawyer said smoothly, stepping forward and placing a thick manila envelope on the oak table. He didn't flinch at the low growl rumbling in David's chest. My firm, Ethelgard Holdings, has just purchased the entirety of your territorial debt from Alpha Marcus of the Northern Ridge. David felt the blood drain from his face. Marcus sold the debt? Without consulting me? Alpha Marcus is a pragmatist, the lawyer replied with a polite, empty smile. Ethelgard offered him a premium to liquidate the asset. We are now your sole creditors, and as per the terms of the original loan, which you defaulted on 3 days ago, we are initiating foreclosure proceedings on the Silver Crescent borderlands. You can't foreclose on a sovereign pact territory, David roared, slamming his fist onto the table, the wood groaning under the force. According to human property law, which Alpha Marcus kindly bound you to in the contract you signed, we certainly can, the lawyer said, unbothered by the display of strength. However, the CEO of Ethelgard is willing to offer you a meeting to discuss terms of surrender. In person. David's mind reeled. His territory was gone. Marcus had betrayed him, stringing him along just to sell his land to a faceless corporation. The walls of his ancestral home suddenly felt like a tomb. Where? David choked out, the word tasting like poison. Oakhaven, the lawyer said, tapping the envelope. The address is inside. I suggest you dress warmly for the commute, Alpha. I hear it's quite cold out there. As the lawyer turned and walked out, David sank back into his chair, the crushing weight of his arrogance finally breaking his spirit. He would have to go to the human city. He would have to beg a corporate CEO for his home. The drive to Oakhaven felt like a descent into an alien world. David gripped the steering wheel of his truck, his knuckles white, his jaw set in a rigid line of barely contained anxiety. Beside him, Elias sat in stony silence, watching the ancient pine forests gradually give way to strip malls, paved highways, and eventually the towering glass and steel monoliths of the human financial district. David hated the city. It smelled of ozone, stagnant water, and millions of heartbeats pressed too closely together. The ambient noise scrambled his heightened senses, leaving him feeling exposed and defensive. He was an alpha king. He belonged beneath open skies, grounded by the earth of his ancestors. Here, boxed within the sterile confines of his vehicle, he felt suffocated. They parked in a subterranean garage beneath the Ethelgard Holdings Tower. The concrete walls echoed with the hollow slam of their truck doors. Waiting for them by the private elevators was the same sharp-suited lawyer from the pack house, Mr. Vance, checking a silver wristwatch with agonizing calmness. Punctual, Alpha David, the lawyer noted smoothly, gesturing toward the open elevator doors. The CEO is expecting you on the 42nd floor. The ascent was silent and violently fast, pressing the air from David's lungs. He stared at the brass reflection of himself in the elevator doors. He looked tired. The shadows under his eyes were deep, and his heavy wool coat felt distinctly out of place compared to the crisp, tailored perfection of the lawyer beside him. He was a king arriving as a beggar, entirely at the mercy of a faceless human corporation that had inexplicably bought his ruin. With a soft chime, the doors parted. They stepped out into a sprawling reception area bathed in natural light. The floors were polished slate, the walls adorned with minimalist art, and a massive wall of floor-to-ceiling glass offered a dizzying view of the city below. It was a cathedral of modern commerce, entirely devoid of warmth. "Through the double doors, gentlemen," the lawyer instructed. Stepping aside, David took a deep breath, squaring his broad shoulders. He pushed his alpha aura outward, a subtle, commanding pressure designed to unsettle his opponents. Elias mirrored his posture, ready to flank him. David pushed open the heavy frosted glass doors and strode into the executive office. The room was vast, an exercise in intimidating minimalism. A long mahogany desk sat in the center, flanked by leather armchairs. Standing near the window, his back to them, was a tall human man reviewing a digital tablet. "I am Alpha David of the Silver Crescent," David announced, his voice a low, authoritative rumble that commanded the space. "I am here to speak with the CEO regarding the unlawful foreclosure of Sovereign Pack Lands." The man by the window, Julian Thorne, turned around, a faint, polite smile touching his lips. "Alpha David, welcome. I am Julian. However, I am merely the managing partner of Ethelgard Logistics." Julian gestured toward the high-backed leather executive chair behind the mahogany desk, which had been turned to face the sweeping view of the skyline. Slowly, the chair rotated. David's breath stopped entirely. His heart gave a violent, painful lurch against his ribs. Sitting behind the desk, her hands steepled elegantly before her, was Luna. She was dressed in a pristine, tailored charcoal suit that emphasized the sharp, unyielding line of her shoulders. Her dark hair, once left to fall wildly in the forest wind, was pulled back into a severe, flawless twist. She looked at him not with the warmth of a former mate, nor the bitter anger of a discarded lover. She looked at him with the detached, clinical calculation of an apex predator observing trapped prey. "Hello, David," Luna said, her voice smooth, perfectly modulated, and utterly devoid of affection. David stared, his mind fracturing as it tried to reconcile the woman he had banished to a cottage with the Titan sitting before him. The silence in the room stretched until it became a physical weight. Elias let out a low, shocked breath, taking an involuntary half-step backward. "You," David choked out, his vocal cords suddenly tight. "You are Ethelgard?" "I am the chief executive officer and primary shareholder, yes. Luna replied calmly. She unsteepled her hands and pressed a button on her desk. A massive monitor on the far wall flared to life, displaying a complex web of financial ledgers, land deeds, and debt acquisitions. The silver crescent crest sat squarely in the center, bathed in red ink. "This is a trick," David snarled, his shock rapidly metastasizing into defensive rage. He slammed a heavy hand onto the mahogany desk, leaning forward, trying to use his sheer physical presence to intimidate her. "You manipulated Marcus. You orchestrated this to humiliate me." Luna did not flinch. She didn't lean back. She met his furious gaze with eyes that resembled polished flint. "I did not manipulate Marcus," Luna corrected softly, her tone dangerously calm. "Marcus manipulated you. He saw an alpha eager for a shiny new crown, and he sold you a gilded cage at 20% interest. I simply waited until you were entirely bankrupt, and then I bought the cage. Please sit down, David. We have business to discuss." David remained standing, his large frame rigid with a mixture of fury and profound humiliation. The mahogany desk between them felt like a chasm he could not cross. He looked to Elias for support, but his beta was staring at the glowing monitor on the wall, his face pale as he processed the sheer magnitude of their financial ruin. "I will not sit, and I will not be spoken to like a subordinate," David growled, his voice vibrating with the low, resonant frequency of an alpha command. It was a biological imperative, a tone designed to force submission from pack members. Luna's expression didn't change. She tilted her head slightly, studying him as if he were a fascinating but ultimately harmless artifact. "That does not work on me anymore, David," she said quietly. "You severed the bond, remember? You stood in the courtyard and told me it was for the good of the pack. I am immune to your commands. More importantly, we are not in the forest. You are in my territory now." The absolute truth of her words struck David like a physical blow. He felt his alpha aura falter, dissipating into the cold, sterile air of the corporate office. He slowly sank into one of the leather armchairs, the fight draining from his muscles, replaced by a cold, hollow dread. "What do you want, Luna?" David asked, his voice losing its thunder, sounding suddenly very tired. "Is this vengeance? You want me to beg?" "Fine. I will apologize for the ceremony. I will apologize for Elena. Just do not take the land from the elders. They have nowhere else to go." For a fleeting second, a shadow passed over Luna's face. It was the briefest crack in her armor, a flicker of the woman who had spent 3 years caring for the very people David had imperiled. "This is not about my ego, David," Luna stated, picking up a sleek silver pen and turning it over in her fingers. "And it certainly isn't about Elena. She is merely a symptom of your profound inability to lead. This is about survival. The winter stores are empty. The pups are shivering. Silas came to me because you have failed them." David's head snapped up. "Silas came here. He brought me this," Luna said. She reached into her desk drawer and withdrew the crumbling, leather-wrapped parchment. She unfurled it carefully on the desk. "The original charter of the Silver Crescent." David stared at the ancient document, confusion warring with panic. "That belongs in the Packhouse archives." "It belongs to the Pack," Luna corrected. "And according to its statutes, an alpha retains sovereignty only as long as they can sustain the territory. If they fail, and a member of the pack holds the territory's debts, that member may invoke the right of stewardship." "You are not a member of the pack," David argued, though his voice lacked conviction. He was grasping at straws, desperate to find a foothold in an avalanche. "You never finalized the excommunication paperwork with the Regional Council. Julian interjected from the window, his voice pleasantly helpful. You were quite distracted by the wedding preparations. Legally, Miss Vance is still a recognized citizen of the Silver Crescent. David felt the blood rush in his ears. He remembered his negligence. He had pushed the bureaucratic paperwork aside, finding it tedious, eager to focus on his new alliance with Marcus. His own arrogance had left the door wide open for his destruction. You are invoking the right, David whispered, the reality finally crashing down upon him. She wasn't just foreclosing on his land like a human bank. She was using ancient werewolf law, combined with modern financial warfare, to legally depose him. Luna slid a thick stack of printed contracts across the desk, stopping just inches from David's hands. Here are my terms, Luna said, her voice carrying the absolute weight of an ultimatum. You will sign these documents. You will voluntarily step down as Alpha, transferring full stewardship of the Silver Crescent territory to Ethelgard Holdings. You will publicly acknowledge your abdication before the elders by sundown tomorrow. David stared at the crisp white paper. And if I refuse? If you refuse, I will initiate the foreclosure under human law, Luna replied without a moment's hesitation. The county sheriff will arrive by Friday to evict you and your new bride from the pack house. I will freeze all supply lines entering the territory. You will have no land, no resources, and no pack to rule over. The choice is yours, David. Submit to the right and save your people, or hold on to your pride and let them freeze. The silence that followed was suffocating. David looked at the documents, the stark black ink representing the end of his bloodline's rule. He had traded a brilliant, fiercely loyal partner for the illusion of power, and in doing so, he had lost his kingdom to her entirely. He slowly reached his hand out, his fingers trembling as they brushed the silver pen Luna offered him. The sleek silver pen felt impossibly heavy in David's trembling hand. It was a delicate, modern instrument. Yet it carried the brutal weight of an executioner's axe. He stared at the dotted line on the crisp white contract, the bold legal text swimming before his exhausted eyes. The office was utterly silent, save for the faint, steady hum of the city's power grid vibrating through the floor-to-ceiling glass. There were no growls, no bared fangs, no spilling of blood on ancient soil. The end of his reign was a quiet, bureaucratic surrender. He looked across the mahogany desk at Luna. She was not gloating. There was no triumphant smirk on her face, nor any vindictive fire in her eyes. She merely watched him with the calm, steady patience of someone who had already calculated every possible outcome. Her detachment hurt him more than any insult could have. If I sign this, David rasped, his throat tight, his voice entirely stripped of its alpha resonance. What becomes of the pack house? What becomes of the ancestral grounds? The pack house remains the administrative and cultural heart of the Silver Crescent. Luna answered evenly, folding her hands neatly on the desk. Ethelgard Holdings will assume responsibility for all structural maintenance and utility debts. The ancestral grounds will be placed into a protected environmental trust. No human development will ever touch them. Your people will be safe, David. They will simply no longer be yours. David closed his eyes. The sheer logic of her plan was undeniable. She had built a fortress out of paper and capital, and she was offering his people sanctuary within it. He had no countermove. Slowly, with a deep, shuddering breath, he pressed the pen to the paper and signed his name. He signed away his title, his sovereignty, and his pride in three swift strokes. He pushed the documents across the desk. Julian Thorne stepped forward from the window, silently collecting the paperwork and placing it into a sleek leather portfolio. The initial supply trucks will depart for the territory at dawn, Luna stated, standing up and smoothing the front of her charcoal blazer. Food, heating oil, and medical supplies. I will arrive with the corporate transition team by Friday to address the elders. David stood slowly. His large frame seemed to have shrunk, the heavy wool coat hanging loosely on his shoulders. He looked at the woman he had banished to a damp cottage 6 months prior. Did you plan this from the moment you left? I planned to survive, Luna corrected softly, her gaze finally meeting his with a flicker of old, familiar intensity. You built the gallows, David. I simply bought the lumber. The drive back to the Silver Crescent was a suffocating descent into a living nightmare. Elias drove the truck in agonizing silence, the heater struggling against the encroaching winter freeze. When they finally pulled through the stone gates of the pack house, the reality of the situation crashed down upon David. He had left as a king desperate for a loan. He was returning as a civilian carrying an eviction notice. He called an emergency assembly in the Grand Hall. The elders, wrapped in heavy blankets, gathered around the unlit hearth. Silas stood at the back, leaning on his wooden cane, his expression unreadable but intensely focused. Elena descended the sweeping wooden staircase, wrapped in her white mink coat, her arms crossed tightly. David, what is the meaning of this? Why are the generators still off? Did you secure the funds from the humans or not? David looked at his new mate. The illusion of her beauty had entirely dissolved, leaving only the hollow reality of her vanity. He turned to the elders, his voice carrying the raw, broken timbre of a defeated man. I have failed you, David announced to the freezing hall. The collective gasp from the pack echoed off the stone walls. The debt was insurmountable. Alpha Marcus sold our notes to a private corporation. To save the territory from human foreclosure, I have officially invoked the right of stewardship. Whispers erupted, laced with panic and confusion. Stewardship? Elena interrupted, stepping forward, her face twisting in outrage. Who holds the stewardship? My father? No, David said, his eyes locking onto Elena's. Luna. The name dropped into the room like a localized earthquake. The murmurs instantly ceased, replaced by a stunned, echoing silence. That is impossible, Elena hissed, pulling out her cell phone with trembling fingers. She's rogue. A rogue cannot hold Packland. She was never legally excommunicated. Silas spoke up from the back of the hall, his raspy voice cutting through the tension. The old historian smiled a slow, grim smile. The paperwork was neglected. She is a citizen, and now she is our steward. Elena pressed the phone to her ear, pacing furiously. After a terse, hushed conversation, she lowered the device, her face pale and furious. My father says the Northern Ridge will not support a pack run by a corporate shell. He is withdrawing our guard. She looked at David, her eyes entirely devoid of affection. I am leaving. I married a reigning alpha, David, not a ruined tenant. My bags will be packed within the hour. David didn't try to stop her. He watched her storm up the stairs, realizing with absolute clarity that the only woman who had ever truly fought for him was the one he had pushed out into the rain. 3 days later, the sound of heavy diesel engines shattered the quiet, frozen morning of the Silver Crescent Territory. A convoy of 6 massive, climate-controlled semi-trucks, all bearing the sleek, minimalist emblem of Ethelgard Logistics, rolled slowly down the main access road. The pack gathered cautiously on the perimeter of the courtyard, their breath pluming in the frigid air. They watched as a team of human contractors efficiently unloaded industrial-grade heaters, pallets of premium winter grain, fresh medical supplies, and insulated blankets. For a pack that had been slowly starving for months, the sudden influx of resources felt like an impossible mirage. A black luxury SUV pulled to a stop near the stone steps of the packhouse. The driver, a polished human in a dark suit, opened the rear door. Luna stepped out into the crisp mountain air. She was not dressed in the flowing silks or ceremonial furs expected of a Luna. She wore tailored black slacks, a warm, fitted cashmere turtleneck, and a long, sharply cut wool overcoat. She looked every inch the formidable chief executive officer she had become. The elders parted instinctively as she walked toward the packhouse. There was no formal bowing, no submission of the neck. She was not their alpha. But as she passed, the elders offered deep, respectful nods. It was a recognition not of ancient, blood-borne dominance, but of sheer, undeniable competence. She had saved them. Silas stepped forward, his cane tapping against the frozen cobblestones. He bowed his head slightly. "Welcome home, Miss Vance." "Thank you, Silas," Luna replied, a genuine warm smile briefly softening her sharp features. "Let's get the children into the East Wing. The contractors are setting up the primary heating grid there now." For the next 10 hours, Luna orchestrated the relief effort with the precision of a military general. She established a temporary office in the very dining hall where David used to struggle over the ledgers. She moved efficiently, directing contractors, authorizing supply allocations, and reviewing structural reports on the packhouse's failing roof. It was near twilight when the heavy oak doors of the dining hall slowly opened. David stood in the doorway. He was dressed in a simple, worn flannel shirt and heavy denim work pants. He had spent the entire day unloading trucks alongside the Omegas, refusing any special treatment. The shadows under his eyes were profound, his posture stripped of the commanding arrogance that used to define him. Luna paused her typing, looking up from her digital tablet. She did not ask him to leave, but she did not invite him to sit either. "The South Quadrant is fully supplied," David reported, his voice low, cautious. "The elders are warm. The pups have eaten. I saw the logs. Thank you for assisting with the manual labor," Luna said, her tone professional, polite but heavily guarded. David took a slow step forward, stopping a respectful distance from the table. "I owe you an apology, Luna. A profound, endless apology. I was blinded by my own ego, and I led our people to the edge of ruin. I see that now. You were always the true strength of this territory." Luna studied his face. She searched for the manipulation, the alpha command, the entitlement that used to color his every interaction. She found none. He was broken, humbled, and finally, agonizingly awake to reality. "An apology does not repair the roof, David," Luna said quietly. "Nor does it erase the fact that you traded my loyalty for a political mirage. I accept your apology because holding on to anger is an inefficient use of my energy. But it changes nothing regarding the current management structure." David nodded slowly, swallowing the bitter pill of her logic. "I understand. I am just a member of the pack now. I will work in the lumber yards or the borders. Whatever the steward requires." "The steward requires competent managers," Luna corrected gently, setting her tablet down. She stood up, walking around the table until she was just a few feet away from him. The scent of pine and hard labor clung to him, sending a strange, nostalgic ache through her chest. "Your physical strength and your knowledge of the terrain are still valuable assets, David. Ethelgard Logistics is expanding its northern timber operations. We need a foreman who understands the forest. David's head snapped up, his eyes widening in shock. You want to employ me? I want to utilize a capable resource, Luna said, a faint, challenging smirk playing on her lips. This is not a charity, David. You will be expected to meet quotas, file reports, and answer to my regional directors. But you will be paid fairly, and you will have a purpose. He stared at her, the sheer magnitude of her grace overwhelming him. She could have banished him. She could have forced him to live in the damp cottage. Instead, she was offering him a chance to rebuild his dignity from the ground up, not as a king, but as a man. I won't fail you, David whispered, a new grounded resolve settling into his posture. Not this time, Luna. See that you don't. Luna replied softly, holding his gaze for a long, heavy moment. The air between them crackled with an undeniable, unresolved tension, a complex mixture of painful history and newfound, profound respect. She turned back to her desk, picking up her tablet. Report to the staging area at 6 tomorrow morning. We have an empire to run. Luna Vance did not need an Alpha King to give her a crown. When betrayed and discarded for the illusion of traditional power, she did not retreat into the shadows. Instead, she weaponized her intellect, her patience, and her unparalleled understanding of modern logistics to legally and brilliantly conquer the very territory that had banished her. She taught David and the entire Silver Crescent Pack that true leadership is not inherited by blood or demanded by a commanding roar. It is built brick by brick through resilience, strategy, and an unwavering commitment to one's own worth. Did you love this story of ultimate revenge, resilience, and female empowerment? If Luna's brilliant ascent inspired you, please remember to like this video. Share it with someone who needs a reminder of their own power, and subscribe to our channel for more dramatic, high-stakes fiction.